today's gospel, we have an encounter between Jesus and the Sadducees. In first century Palestine, there were different groups of Jews with different beliefs, so sort of different denominations of Jews, if you will. And the Sadducees were a denomination that believed there was no resurrection, or there is no resurrection of the dead. And they accepted only the first five books of what we now call the Old Testament as their scriptures. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So in this little scene with Jesus, the Sadducees are basically testing Jesus about his idiotic teaching about the resurrection by asking him a ridiculous question. Right? You all laughed. You heard this. It's a sort of a, you know, in a way, it's a how many angels can dance on the head of a pin sort of question, right? And it's a question grounded in Old Testament law, where sort of ancient social security was that if a man died and left a widow who had no children, that she was to marry his brother, and his brother would provide for her and try to have a child by her so that she would have a child to care for her in her old age, and also so that his brother's family line and inheritance would continue, right? Mm-hmm. It seems a little weird to us, but it was a system that provided for those who would otherwise have no provider. And so the Sadducees sort of, you know, play this out to the nth degree. And the point is to make the opposing worldview look ridiculous. But Jesus answers by saying, talking about a whole different world, a whole different kind of reality, and says, this is so far beyond your imagining. Imagine a world in which women are not given away, in which worth and agency doesn't depend on gender. Wow, imagine that. A new kind of life, where there are children of God and children of the resurrection who don't die anymore. Now, I think, truth to tell, many of us are Sadducees. We can't even conceive of a resurrection from the dead. We know what reality looks like. So, I want you to bear with me here while I take a side trip, apparently, and talk about a book that was written back in 1884 by someone called Edwin Abbott, and it's called Flatland. In Flatland is narrated by a square who lives in a two-dimensional world. So, Flatland, okay? And this world is inhabited by two-dimensional beings. The women are all lines, and then you have other kinds of figures who live in this world. You know, they're triangles and squares and polygons, and the highest level is a circle. And they can move, you know, north and south and east and west. And when you can't really tell when someone approaches you what kind of being they are, because what would you see if you are in a two-dimensional world and someone approaches you?
Just a line.
A line. And the women are points, right? Unless you see them from the side. If you see them from either end, they're a point. The first thing that people do when they approach and are introduced is, would you permit me to feel you? So you can tell their angles and judge what kind of being they might be, because you can't perceive. And of course, you can never see the inside of someone, only their outside, the perimeter, and you would have to travel all the way around them in order to see their whole perimeter. And they have this whole society that is grounded in a completely two-dimensional reality. And there are a few puzzling signs that of something that they don't have an explanation for. Like, there's this all-pervasive light. Where does it come from? They don't know. Well, in this story, Flatland, the square one day is visited. visited by a sphere from the third dimension. He comes and hovers over the square and addresses him. Now, the square is mightily puzzled because he cannot see any lines around him that would indicate the presence of another being, and his voice appears to be coming from inside him. Right? Because he has no conception of upward and downward. Everything exists in two dimensions. And so the sphere addresses him and says, talks about this third dimensional reality, the three dimensional reality, and the square is convinced that it is completely bogus. There can be no such thing as a three dimensional reality. And so finally, the sphere says, well, I'll show you. I'm going to enter into your world. And of course, if you're still in two dimensions and the sphere enters your world, what do you see? You see a line, which if you went around it would be a circle. But you still can't grasp the sphere. Right? The most you can see is that as the sphere goes up and down, if you're imagining this going through this sheet instead of by it, it would get larger and smaller, and then finally vanish. You know, and of course, when it vanishes, it's like, where did it go? It was here a minute ago. Where did it go? Right? But you have, the poor square has nothing in his experience of reality that can explain this visitation by the sphere, who appears to be a circle of diminishing and increasing size. And so finally, the sphere says, all right, the only way I'm going to be able to convince you of this three-dimensional reality is to take you into it. And so he picks the square up and takes the square upward and gives him a vision of his world from above it, where he can see inside all the lines and circles and see his own two-dimensional house and, you know, all these different things that were... He has a completely different vision of it and realizes that this three-dimensional world does indeed exist. But then he gets returned to his two-dimensional reality and tries to explain it to other people who are convinced he's crazy and eventually lock him up.
1800s, that's amazing.
It is amazing. And it's actually a book that is used by physicists. Okay. Because of the way that it encourages the imagination. You know, contemporary physicists, you know, point out that in the second dimension, you have some indications of the third dimension, that, for example, my shadow, if cast into a second-dimensional or two-dimensional world, would be a hint that there's another dimension, because someone could go around, you know, the base of me, and it wouldn't equate with the length of the shadow, right? Mm-hmm. Or the shape. And so that shadow might point to the existence of something that's beyond the explanation of this two-dimensional world. And physicists are actually now talking about doing experiments on shadows of the fourth dimension, because physicists say there's a fourth dimension and is possibly as many as 11. Hard to wrap our minds around, right? So all of that as an analogy. Now, Jesus is talking to people who are, figuratively speaking, living in a two-dimensional reality. They are convinced that the dead die and are buried, and that is the end. This is their experience, this is the world, this is all that can ever be. And Jesus says, no. Even within the books that you accept, there are shadows that show us another reality. And he points to the story of the burning bush in Exodus and Moses' encounter with God, and says that God introduces God's own self as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am. And says, now God is God, not of the dead, but of the living. For to God, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all who have ever lived are alive. Whoa. Jesus is talking about the resurrection as a reality of another dimension. Now, I'm talking analogy here. I'm not trying to make a physicist's claim that the resurrection exists in the fourth or fifth or 11th dimension. That's not my claim. But the analogy that we see only shadows of the resurrection. It is beyond our imagining, but that doesn't make it not real. It's just outside our experience. And Jesus comes, in a sense, as a sphere, saying, there is a reality beyond your imagining that you cannot grasp, and yet it is real. I am a witness to it. I come from that reality. And it is a reality where existence does not end at death, where individuals live on, where they are known and beloved, and they are in God's company eternally, where they never die again. And this is the reality that Christians confess. Not because we see it, not because we can document it, but because we have experienced shadows of it. Because we have one who is a witness to it. That God, the God of the resurrection, is present to us now. And speaking within us as we experience it. Completely permeating our world, but transcending it. Much as a sphere, if you could imagine it just expanding through all of that flatland, would completely permeate that world and yet transcend it. And so we live within God, and yet God completely transcends all that we experience, all that we can know. This is our amazing confession and our hope, that when our life in this dimension is done, our life is not over, that those whom we love, we will see again, because they are in God, eternally, beloved, always. Amen.